This is Dolores Cannon again with the Metaphysical Hour. We're going live again tonight, and I just hope we'll be able to stay on the air because I'm in the middle of a terrible thunderstorm here. It's pouring buckets of rain, lightning and thunder and hail, and they said we're in the middle of a tornado alert. So I just hope we can stay on the air. At least the telephone lines are buried underground, but the power might go out. So it's an interesting situation. We'll see what's going to happen. And my guest is away on the other side of the world in Australia, so we're going to see if we can make this work tonight. We're a little late starting because they were trying to get the telephone line to go through. So before we start, let me give out a toll-free number in case anyone wants to call in and ask questions tonight. The number is 877-876-5227. 877-876-5227. And my guest tonight is in Sydney, Australia. And Helen Reddy, the very famous singer and actress, and I'm very, very honored to have you on the show, Helen.
Well, thank you, Dolores. I'm very happy to be on the show, and it's a beautiful Saturday morning here in Sydney. It's a little cool because it's autumn, but the sun is shining and the sky is blue.
Okay, that's one of the reasons probably why you were having trouble hearing me is because we have this roar going on in the background of all the rain and the lightning and the thunder.
Well, I hope everyone is safe where you are.
But that's probably why you were having a little trouble hearing when we first started. Well, maybe it'll go over and it'll clear out before the show's over anyway. Let's hope so.
Let's hope.
Okay. Well, I met Helen just last November when I was in Sydney, Australia, and we had dinner together, and she is a very remarkable woman, and I'm really honored to have her on the show and to have her coming to our conference next month. And here it is. It's already May. Time is getting away from us, and since we're going to have
right.
Just in 6 weeks, you'll be here in America.
That's right. On the 13th of June, I'll be in Arkansas.
Yeah, and that seems so strange. The time is going so fast. That's what I'm doing. I'm interviewing the ones who are going to be at the conference, and Helen is our keynote speaker. And Helen, Darren said you're going to be going to Europe before you come to America. Is that true?
Yes, that's true. I'm going to be having... a little R&R. I have friends in England that I want to visit, and that seems to be the best time for me to take a few weeks and go there.
Okay. When I go over there, it's always business, and I don't get to really play anymore. It's just always keeping busy, but I really like England.
I do too. And of course, I lived and worked there for a while, so I have many very good friends that I've maintained the friendship with over the years.
Okay. Well, I don't think that Helen Reddy needs any introduction. She's a very famous singer and an actress, and oh golly, I'm just reading from Darren's notes here. For 35 years, you were doing this. 40 hit records, and the first Australian to ever win a Grammy. So you have done so much, but then you went in a different direction, didn't you?
Well, I'd had a lifelong interest in metaphysics, in hypnotism, those sort of things. And I reached a point in my life where I just said, well, I've done everything there is to do in show business, and I'd like to do something else, and I would like to explore these other interests. And so I went back to college and got my degree at the age of 60 in clinical hypnotherapy and neuro-linguistic programming.
Uh-huh. So you're over in my field. We're both doing the same thing, really.
Well, you're doing a lot more of it than I am, Dolores, and I have a lot to learn from you.
Oh, I don't know. You know, you're probably coming at it from a different direction than I am, but you're interested in the past life regressions, too.
Yes, I am, yes.
You know, whenever I told people you're coming for the conference, they said, well, what would a former singer come to a metaphysical conference for? And I said, well, you don't understand. She's been in metaphysics all her life. And that's true, isn't it?
Well, ever since I was very religious as a child, but I had an out of body experience when I was 11, which was life changing, and that gave me the realization that my body was simply something that I was inside, that we all did exist separately from our bodies, and that life was eternal.
Uh-huh. You know, it's funny how sometimes one little incident will be a big change in our life. You know, have us go in a different direction.
Yes. Well, it was a major incident, and of course, it's more than 50 years ago now, and one simply did not discuss such things because you were in danger of being told you were nuts and being locked up in those days.
Definitely, definitely. We had to keep a lot of stuff to ourselves. But
right.
I remember I asked you, too, you know, how you got interested in show business, and you said you come from a family that has always been in show business.
That is correct, yes. My three of my grandparents were either actors or musicians, but both my parents. My sister and I are both in the business. Her son, my nephew, is currently starring in the West End of London.
Oh.
And it looks very much like my granddaughter, who has an incredible voice, is going to follow me into performing.
Oh, that's wonderful. It's going to just continue on that way.
Yes. In fact, I recently did a tribute on radio down in Melbourne, Australia. It was the centenary of my mother's birth. She would have been 100 years old this year. And we did a two-hour radio program paying tribute to her and the work that she did during her lifetime.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, I think people that are listening probably know you best for your, well, I guess you would call your signature song that made you, I think that's really what made you famous, wasn't it? The I Am Woman song?
Yes, yes, I wrote the lyrics to that song, and it has indeed become a classic.
I Am Woman, Hear Me Roar. And that's
in numbers too big to ignore, right.
They said you inadvertently started the women's liberation movement, really.
Oh, no, the movement had already started. I was an early adherent. Simply because, you know, I had always had deep feelings about how badly women were treated in so many aspects of society. And to know, to learn that there were other women who felt the way that I did, it was like a window opened. And, so that gave me an avenue that I could then write that song and sing it and, for it to have a message which I think still resonates now, today.
Well, here again, it's just one little thing. Sometimes that can be life-changing.
Yes.
But, you know, one thing, I really liked the story you told about how you wrote those lyrics. Would you want to tell the listeners how that happened?
Well, I was about to record my first album, you know, my first hit was I Don't Know How to Love Him, but it was only a single. I didn't have a contract to record an album, but Capitol very, very quickly signed me up once I Don't Know How to Love Him was a hit. And they wanted me to put out an album as quickly as possible. But I wanted an album of songs that reflected how I felt. And It seemed obvious to me that there weren't any songs that said anything about strong women, because when I looked at the women in my family, they'd, you know, my mother, my aunts, my grandmother, they'd lived through the Depression and two world wars and kept the family together. These were strong women. And the songs of the time were terrible. There was one song I remember in the 60s called Born a Woman, and the lyrics were, if you're born a woman, you're born to be lied to, cheated on, and treated like dirt. But when your man comes home, you're glad it happens that way, because to be his woman, no price is too great to pay. I mean, what sort of message was that to be sending young girls? It was like glorifying domestic abuse.
Yes, exactly.
So I realized that the song I was looking for simply didn't exist and that I would have to write it myself. And although I had written poetry, I never associated poetry with song lyrics, which seems kind of ridiculous now. But I sat down and I wrote the lyrics. And I wasn't happy with any of the melodies I was coming up with, so I asked someone else to write the melody. That was another Australian, Ray Burton. And the song did eventually become a hit.
Well, I remember you telling me that you were just laying there and the word just came into your mind. And
well, that one phrase, I'm strong, I'm invincible, I am woman, kept going over and over in my head. I was lying there in bed. I wasn't even too sure what invincible meant, but it sounded pretty good. So That one phrase was the start of it, but I really had to work for the rest.
You said it sounds like a good word, even if you didn't know what it meant.
Exactly.
But that song just became like almost more than like an anthem, I guess, for the whole feminist movement.
Well, yes, it does. Even to this day, it's regarded as a feminist anthem, and I think I was able to play an important part in that. So many of the feminists of that era, and particularly the way the press portrayed them, you know, they came across as being very shrill and angry and what have you. And I, of course, was, you know, singing a song. And so many women, you know, whether they were on their way to the supermarket or maybe taking the kids to school, the song would come on the car radio and they would sing along. And I think the message of empowerment got through to them more easily that way than any other feminist statements.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm trying to remember our conversation. I think you said it was difficult to even get that that on the record out there where people could hear it.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. There was tremendous negative reaction from radio. And, you know, so many DJs would say, oh, I hate that song, I can't stand that song. But it's funny, you know, my wife really likes it. And so we weren't getting any airplay on it. And so I had to turn to television. And there were a lot of TV shows in that era that featured singers, professional singers. And I went on TV 19 times and sang I Am Woman. And that caused women to then call up the radio stations and request the song. So it was really through the use of television that we were able to force airplay. And it took 9 months from the time the song first came on the charts at number 99 till the time it went to number one. It took 9 months for the song to go all the way up the charts. That would never happen nowadays, Dolores, because if something doesn't make it in 2 weeks, it gets pulled. But the interesting thing for me was that 9 months coincided with my pregnancy, with my son, and he was actually born the week that I Am Woman went to number one. So that was a pretty thrilling week for Helen Reddy.
You've got to tell what you said, that in those days, they thought anybody in the feminist movement was either gay or they couldn't get a man. Now, tell what you think about that.
Yes, well, you know, I was still out singing I Am Woman until 2 weeks before he was born, so I think my shape certainly got rid of the old she couldn't get a man line.
I think that was so funny because that showed, you know, that it wasn't the stereotype, let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most people, though, they give up whenever they can't make it right away. And nothing is easy in this life. You have to believe in what you're doing and fight for it.
Yeah. And I'm like a dog with a bone sometimes. I just will not let go.
And see what
if I believe something is right.
Yeah, what would have happened if you would have given up, if you hadn't gone to those extremes?
Oh, I don't know. You know, what if? We can never really truly answer what ifs.
Yeah, but it showed that was meant to be because that song really did things that you never would have thought it would have done.
No, I had no idea the impact that it would have. I was simply expressing how I felt about womanhood.
Mm-hmm. But there were a lot of other people out there that felt the same way, and that's why it took
yes.
off.
Yes, I touched a nerve, and it was wonderful to me. I mean, I still to this day get letters from women, and sometimes men, you know, who will say, you know, your song gave me the courage to get out of an abusive relationship, or because of your song, I decided to go to law school, and even with the song You and Me Against the World, which was enormously popular, so many people have said to me, you know, I lost my child to leukemia, that was our song, or my mother passed away recently, that was our song. So it's, I treasure those letters and the people who say that to me because, it touches me on a very deep level.
You know, that's the thing. When you're in the middle of it, you don't really see it. You're too involved with all the things that are happening around you, and you don't really see the impact.
No, you don't. You don't because you're so busy with the mechanics of just getting on with it, you know.
Yeah.
But there was a point in my life where I did take stock. And as you've read in my book, that was the period that I believe I had an angel visitation at my home. And that was very life-changing.
Before you do that, do you want to tell about the out-of-the-body experience first before we go into the angel? Because you mentioned the out-of-body. You didn't
all right. Well, the out-of-body experience, I was 11 years old, as I said, and I was in private school, an all-girls school. And we used to meet for assembly every morning. And, you know, there were no chairs provided. We would stand for the entire length of assembly. And, you know, we would sing a hymn and there would be a prayer and the headmistress would make various announcements. And then we would all file out, you know, row by row according to our classes. Anyway, this particular morning, the headmistress had been delayed by a phone call, and we were kept standing for longer than usual. And, of course, I know now that, you know, having Addison's disease, that I cannot stand for long periods of time. I can walk, but just standing still for a long period of time, I do tend to faint. But I hadn't at this point in my life.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was starting to feel funny. I was seeing brown spots in front of my eyes, and I had an urge to put my hand on the shoulder of the girl standing in front of me to steady myself. But I thought, oh, no, I might startle her, and I don't want to cause a scene. And the next thing I knew, I was at the back of the room looking down, although there was no sense of having moved in time or space. But I was looking down there, and one of the girls down at the front of the room was lying on the floor. And I thought, oh, my goodness, I wonder who it is, because we were all in identical uniforms. And I immediately, you know, zoomed in for a close-up, and I was looking at my own face.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, oh, my God, I've died. And that was, I can't even describe what I felt at that moment. But I, all these thoughts, you know, went through my head that, well, we do survive death. We do survive death. And I'm still me. I'm not in that body anymore, but I'm still me.
Uh-huh.
And at some point, because they picked me up and carried me out of the room, at some point, as they were going through the door, they accidentally banged me against the door jamb, and that jolted me back into consciousness. That's my next awareness. And I was just overwhelmed. Who on earth can I possibly ever tell this to?
So you went back into your body at that time then?
I went back into the body, yes.
Mm. But you didn't understand at that time what had happened, I guess.
No, no, I knew I had had an extraordinary experience. And none of the reading that I did, there was very little written on metaphysics in those days. And it was several years later, in my teens, that I read an account by a yogi where he talked about having an out-of-body experience, which he called astral projection. And I went, that's it. That's it. I'm not the only one.
Uh-huh.
And that was a tremendous relief.
Yeah, you're not crazy. There are other people out there doing it.
Right, exactly.
But really, I guess that was something that was meant to start you thinking about metaphysics and the strange and the unusual anyway.
Well, I think it was a little tap on the shoulder because at the age of nine, I mentioned that I was very religious as a child, but at the age of nine, I had become an atheist because the church was not answering questions I was asking. I was bothered by the hypocrisy. And so I had left the church and pretty much become an atheist. So this was the tap on the shoulder that said, just a minute, Helen, you were on the wrong track, okay, but there is a right way.
Yeah, you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
No, no, not at all. And I do believe in miracles. They happen every day.
Oh, definitely. I see them all the time in my work anyway.
Uh-huh.
Then you were starting to talk about the visitation with the angel. Tell everybody about that one.
Well, it was, I was alone. I was in my house, which was about to be sold. And I was sitting in the living room watching television, and there was these lights on my stairs, and identical light fixtures in the ceiling, both top and bottom landings of these stairs. And there were two light bulbs in each fixture, about 60 watts, I think. And each of the light fixtures, one of the bulbs was burned out. And I said, well, there's, you know, no point in changing the bulbs until both bulbs go out in one of them, and then I'll get the ladder and change them all.
Uh-huh.
Well, I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden I'm aware of a very bright light in the room. And I get up and I go to the stairs, and all four of the bulbs are burning like 150 watts, very, very bright.
Wow.
And they stayed that way. They stayed that way until I, you know, when I went to bed that night, I turned them off. When I got up the next morning, I flipped the switch on, and they were back to being the two dull bulbs. That night, again, I'm sitting there in the living room, and suddenly the lights are very bright, and the same thing happens again. At which point, I'm saying, okay, you've got my attention. You know, what is this all about? And I sort of sat at the bottom of the landing and had a meditation, and it was obvious to me, you know, what does a light shining on stairs mean? Reviewing my life, because I'd never thought about it. I was always living in the moment or worried about where my next job was coming from. I'd never really sat and reviewed my life and my career. And it was complete. You know, knowing that the lyrics to I Am Woman were in the Modern American History High School textbooks, that was like a release. It's like, you cannot top this, Helen. It's okay to retire. You fulfilled the obligations that you were supposed to fulfill in that field. You have other things to do. You need to write a book. You need to be going out and speaking. And that's what I have been doing since.
But it wasn't anything you would have thought before that. You were going back.
Well, it had, you know, I had had offers to write an autobiography many times, but they, publishers always wanted, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and that wasn't what my life had been about. And anyway, I was approached by the woman who became my agent, who, oddly enough, I met through her husband, who's a psychiatrist. And I met him when I was living on Norfolk Island because he was the visiting psychiatrist, and he needed to meet me so he could refer patients to me after he was gone. And we started talking, and turned out that, you know, he lived at the end of my street. His wife was the agent for my daughter's godfather. There are all these connections. And so I had dinner with them that night, and she never said a thing to me about being my agent or anything like that, which I was very happy about. And then several weeks later, I got this parcel full of books that she had either written or edited or published or was the agent for the author. And because we had talked a lot about metaphysical things when we had dinner. And she'd written at the bottom of the letter, "Would you have any interest in doing a body, mind, spirit book?" And I thought, well, yes, I would be interested in doing that. So I started writing about, you know, some of my psychic experiences during my life. And then I found, Dolores, I needed to put them in the context of my life so that you could see the impact that they had had on me, that the growth through the years with my learning and so forth. And so I finished up writing, I call it a memoir, but I suppose in essence it is an autobiography.
Yes.
And there you have it. That's the book, The Woman I Am.
That's a turnaround by a woman. It's The Woman I Am.
Right. Yes. Okay. Yes, I think it's a good title.
It is. It's a good title. But did you find it hard to just quit music after all those years?
No, not at all. Not at all. I was traveling and performing for 55 years, since I was 5 years old.
Wow.
And I was very ready to give it up.
Well, I know you were talking about it. People think it's exciting and it's glamorous, but, you know, it's the same thing with me. Every place is the same. Every hotel is the same. Every airport is the same.
Right.
Every theater, there's nothing glamorous about it when you're in the middle of it.
I remember Dolores staying one night at one of the chain hotels, and it was a Murphy bed, and there was this, you know, when the bed was up, there was this painting that was underneath it, you know. And then when you pulled the bed down, the identical painting was on the wall inside the bed. When you say that they all look the same, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, because after
and
that,
I don't think people understand, you know, they see that hour that you're on stage and that's all so glamorous and exciting, but they don't know that you may have traveled 8 hours each way just to do that 1 hour.
Uh-huh. That's it. People.
So, yes, it's hard.
They see the end result without realizing all the stuff that goes into it. And I know
right.
I'm up there giving a lecture, and I forget what city I'm in because each one is just like, and I said, until the people start asking questions, and I say, oh, yeah, I'm in a different country. Otherwise, there isn't any difference, really.
Mm.
And, you know, it doesn't have the glamour. You know, the travel isn't as exciting as people think it is.
And, of course, you know, as the years have gone by, the traveling has gotten harder and harder. I mean, I remember when sitting in coach, if you had to get up to go to the bathroom, nobody had to move for you. There was enough leg room that you could walk past them.
Mm-hmm.
Try doing that nowadays.
Yeah, everybody's crammed in there.
Right.
Uh-huh.
So it's not fun, you know. The certainly the traveling part of it can be very draining on the system.
Uh huh. And then, you know, even in the middle of it all, it's not that exciting. I think, as you said, when you're in the middle of it, it's just hard work.
Right. But at the end of it all, when you can look back and say, my goodness, I did this and I did that and I did this and I did that, and it's you're kind of amazed that you've actually managed to do all these things.
I know. It's always in hindsight. In the middle of it, you don't realize it, but then you look back and say, you know, I guess I did accomplish something.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you said you were tired of it. But then what happened to make you want to go into hypnotism? That's quite far cry.
Well, I had, as a young person, I had, you know, growing up in show business, I had seen stage hypnotists at work. But they were showmen, you know, and I never took them very seriously. It was like a magician, you know, it's all tricks as far as I was concerned. And then in the 1950s, I read that book by Maury Bernstein, The Search for Bridie Murphy.
Oh, yeah. That was
a life-altering book.
Yeah, that book started a lot of people thinking, although it would not even be published today.
Exactly. Well, it was two things. That book did two things for me. First, it introduced me to the theory of reincarnation, which answered a lot of the questions that I had not been able to get answers to when I was young. And it also made hypnotism not only legitimate, but a possible tool for research. And like you, Dolores, I love research, particularly history. I mean, one of the things I love about doing a past life regression is that it's like going through a time tunnel because you are with someone who is in that other time and place.
That's exactly what I call it. For time traveling, we are going through a time tunnel.
Yes.
I love the research. But, you know, Search for Bridie Murphy, it wouldn't be published today, but it was a book for its time. It
absolutely.
Meant for that time period to make people start thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, it's a classic, but now it wouldn't be published because it's too simple. I get lots of those submitted to my company, and it's not what you would do now. But it did open the door and started people thinking back then.
Right.
But that got...
And that's 50 years ago now, so...
That's when I began. Yeah. I began at the same time that book came out. That was
around. Mm-hmm. So a lot has happened since then.
A lot has happened. We started at the same time. But
yes.
That lit a spark in you then about that?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
I said that lit a spark in you about hypnotism then?
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. And I started hypnotism because I had worked... in the same show as a hypnotist in my teens. And this was after I'd read The Search for Bridie Murphy, you know. So I was, I tried to engage the hypnotist in a conversation about it, but he didn't want to know. He was strictly a showman. But I used to stand in the wings every night and watch how he selected his subjects. And so I pretty much learned the basics of hypnotism just by watching him work every night. But it wasn't until I was, 60 that I actually went and officially got a degree. Well, I mean, up until that point, there was no such thing as a course in clinical hypnotherapy. It didn't exist.
Yeah. That's why I more or less have to write my own rules, because there wasn't anything when we started out way back then.
That's right. And you've contributed a great deal. A great deal, Dolores, and I can't wait to see you again so we can chat in depth on a few things.
Uh-huh. But I'm the same way. When you're in the middle of it, you don't see it. And, you know, I can't see it. All I know is that I've written a lot of books and I think I've done some good, but you don't really realize it when you're in the middle of it.
Right.
But I find it exciting because it's always changing and growing and still learning more new things all the time.
Yeah.
But I admire
it. Yeah, I learn something every day, and I'm a knowledge junkie, so that's one of the things that I love about life. Every day gives me an opportunity to learn more.
I know, that's the same with me. I'm the next thing. You don't know what it's going to be. But if are you going back to college at 60?
Well, I needed to have the letters after my name. You know, I already had the skills, but I wanted to expand on those skills, and I wanted to be legitimate as far as science was concerned. And I must say, after 55 years in the arts, I am getting deeper and deeper into the sciences now.
Yeah. Well, I know I'm working with a lot of doctors now all over the world because I'm involved in the alternative medicine and, natural healing. And that's becoming very big also.
Yes. Yes, it is.
And this is recognized now. The hypnotism is now recognized as a part of that. So it's come a long way.
And as a force for good. I mean, I do not have too much patience with hypnotists who, want to make somebody quack like a duck or do anything ridiculous. That is not hypnotism as far as I'm concerned.
I don't agree with that at all because it's entertainment is what it is. But I know how it's done, but I wouldn't want to do that kind of hypnotism.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I take it very seriously, and I wish more people would too.
Well, I know after one of I'm giving my classes now everywhere. After one of my classes I did a few months ago, a man came up to me and said, "Oh, now I'm going to be able to control people's minds." That shocked me. That was not what I was teaching you. That's not the
No. Well, you might need to put some sort of screening purpose in place to keep that type of personality out of the class.
Yeah, you don't know until they come, what their motives are. But
right.
I really will talk about karma. Look what they're going to take on if they're going to use it for that. Because
and the damage that they can do.
I want it to be used for good. I don't want somebody to use it in the wrong way.
Right.
But, anything, no matter what it is, it can be turned around and used in the wrong way if somebody wanted to do it.
Yes.
That goes along. Anything can be done that way.
That's true.
I think the main thing is we're trying to help people. That's what you're doing.
Yes.
Is trying to help people.
That's the only real point in life.
Uh-huh.
We are, we're all in this life together, and we are here to help each other.
Well, your practice is there in Sydney, isn't it?
Yes, it is, yes. I do sometimes see clients, overseas when I'm traveling, but it's usually a sort of spur of the moment where I meet somebody who has a particular problem and I recognize that fate has put the two of us together at that time and place for a reason and I'll have a session with them. But it's rare. Mostly I see people in Sydney.
Yeah, I don't like to do it either when I'm traveling because there's usually lectures and classes going on, and they don't realize that you're just a person. You can't do it all. It's too much sometimes. It takes too much energy. But you have an office there in Sydney where people see you?
No, I see people at home, actually.
Oh, you haven't come to your house.
Yes. Yeah. I have a home on Norfolk Island, but I also have a flat here in Sydney.
Oh.
So I see people here. Well, I don't see people. It's not a full time practice. I don't have the energy for a full time practice. And of course, I don't. Some people call me. I want to stop smoking or something like that. I don't bother with those cases because there's so many other people who specialize in those fields. I'm like you, Dolores. I'm really interested in doing research, and so I'm attracted to the cases where something unique and special is going on.
Yeah, we can trace it back to find out the cause of it, where it comes from, and what
exactly right. Yes.
What's the problem from other lives that they carry over?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and it's never the same answer. You can have people with the same problem, but the cause is usually different. I've certainly noticed that with breast cancer patients. I mean, one woman went back to a life where she had been shot with a bow and arrow in that breast. Someone else, it was related to her mother and a bad relationship with her mother. I mean, there can be so many reasons why an illness takes hold.
Well, that's what people have told me. They said, why don't you write a book about the causes of these illnesses related to other lives? And I said, because it's not that simple. It's not cut and dried. There will always be that exceptional case that doesn't follow the rule.
You know,
Louise Hay's books where they'll say this, you know, aches and pains are caused by this. It's a good thing to refer to, but you're always going to have that oddball, that one that doesn't follow the rule, but it makes perfect sense. And it
right.
Heals them. That's the amazing thing. It does heal them. So that's what we're
mm-hmm.
after. Anyway. Uh-huh. But I think... I heard a beep a while ago. That usually means somebody's on the line. I don't know if there's anybody there or not, though. But it would have been
okay.
But I was looking at the article that Darren wrote about you, and you were talking about now. What is your goal now in your lectures that you're doing all over the world?
I think basically to help people adjust to this change that we're going through. We are, you know, in the midst of a tremendous shift, not only in the planet, but a shift in our consciousness and the way we think. And particularly, I think, in the Western world today, where everything is about how we look. It's not about how we look, it's about how we think. And so if I can help people adjust more easily to the change and to see how wonderful the changes that we're going through are and how they're going to benefit humanity, I think it can be very beneficial.
And that's what I tell people, that it's a changing of the frequencies and the vibration of the whole earth. And
yes.
We are into something that's very dynamic, something that's very important that's getting ready
mm-hmm.
to happen.
I'm very encouraged by the number of people who are responding positively to some of the changes. I mean, recently in Australia we had those terrible bushfires, and I wasn't moved that much by people who said we've lost everything. I was moved by the people who said, well, we may have lost everything, but we still have each other, or we've really learned, you know, how strong our neighborhood is and how good our friendships are. It's about, I think compassion is going to be a lot more important than cash in our coming world. And I love to see how many Americans now are going out and planting gardens. I mean, I've heard about one woman, she had 12 flower pots on her apartment balcony. She's now got 12 heads of lettuce growing in those pots. There's been a giant move towards self-sufficiency, and I think that's very, very important. And we are seeing a new world emerge.
You're talking about the things over there, like the bushfires. But, you know, it always goes back to the lesson that's learned. A lot of them learn that it's difficult, but they learn that it isn't all about physical things and possessions, because those can
yes.
be realistic. It's what lessons are you learning from it?
That's
and
right.
It changes their entire life that way.
Yes,
but
and just courage, just the courage of ordinary people sometimes. It's so amazing.
Well, what I'm finding too, and you may be finding the same thing, is that people's physical bodies are feeling this change also, as the physical body adjusts to the change in vibration and frequency. Are you noticing that with your clients?
Well, actually, now that you've said that, because I had forgotten about that, because I've had some medical issues lately, and I have an ongoing condition, as you know, and we've had to adjust the medication, because you know, the dosage was no longer right, and so that relates to what you've just said, of course.
Yeah, because a lot of times what I've found is that people will have symptoms, And they don't know what it is. They go to the doctors and they can't find anything wrong with them. And then it'll stop. Mm-hmm. And then maybe a few months later it'll come back. And what I found is the adjustments as our body shifts, because you can't do it all at once. It's too hard. The body couldn't handle
right.
it. So it has to be done gradually. And as it, you know, adjusts, and then it tapers off, and there'd be some other symptom that come up. That's what I'm trying
mm-hmm.
to do. If you can think that way, then people aren't that afraid. They realize
absolutely.
It's a natural thing that's happening to everybody.
That's right. I thank you for reminding me about that. That just shone a light on something for me.
Okay, because I know every time I get something and I think, what, is there something wrong with me? I don't ever get sick, but I've found that any time you're sick or have any symptoms, it's a message. They're trying to tell you something. So I'm trying
yes.
to figure out, okay, what is it now? And I think a lot of times that's what it is. It's just we're adjusting. We're changing with the shift of the earth.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But is this the message that you're delivering when you're doing these lectures? Or is it more than that?
Oh, I cover a lot of ground. And sometimes it's, you know, what I love most about the lectures is the Q&A afterwards. That's my favorite part, because
yeah.
I get such wonderful questions, and I can usually finish up spending more time answering questions than I have in my speech. But people are so much more aware now. They're asking really intelligent questions, and I do love what I'm doing.
That's the important part. I know you said you've also spoken over here at the ARE, the Edgar Casey Foundation, and other groups.
Oh, yes, I spoke there in February.
Uh-huh. You're doing some talks in the States anyway.
Yes, yes.
So, you know, but they said you're also trying to talk. Are you still promoting the feminist movement? Are you talking about that?
Well, I don't know that there is a movement as such. It hasn't been for years and years. I mean, I am still a feminist, and I will be pushing for full equality for women, you know, for the rest of my life. But we did backslide a great deal during the 1980s. There was a tremendous media backlash against the feminist movement. And so many things that we were pushing for, we simply never got. We still have not ratified the Equal Rights Amendment, which is unbelievable to me. You know, one can only push on. And I believe every woman deserves to be treated with dignity and respect. And the media does not treat women that way.
I'm watching the clock. It's amazing, an hour has already gone by. But we started a little late, so I think he was going to give me a little leeway here.
Okay.
I was talking last week to one of my guests, too, about the return of the goddess movement. Because, you know, for so long, it's been the worship, you know, of the male. And now it's time
right.
for the women to come back and be in their power.
I believe, you know, if you look at modern day religions, I believe man has created God in his own image.
Yes.
And God to me has no gender. God is the source. The source of all life.
Okay, I believe that also. Well, I'm gonna have to bring this to a close because we are coming up to the hour. But I do want to tell everyone, Helen is going to be our keynote speaker at our conference here in Arkansas, and it's June the 12th to the 14th is the conference, and Helen will be speaking on Saturday night. And if you want information about the conference, go to our website. My company is Ozark Mountain Publishing, so the website is Ozark Mountain, abbreviated, OZARKMT.com. Or if you're overseas, it's OZARKMT.com for more information about the conference. And Helen, if anyone wants to contact you, how can they do that?
Well, I have a website, which is simply helenready.com.
Okay.
H-E-L-E-N-R-E-D-D-Y.
okay, and they can cope with you on that way.
They can get in touch with me through the website, yes.
Oh, that's good. Okay, well, I'm going to have to sign off, and I'll be seeing you in just 6 weeks, really.
I'm looking forward to it enormously, Dolores.
And I really thank you for being on the show. It's a great honor.
Well, thank you for having me.
You're a remarkable woman. Okay.
And God bless.
Good night, everyone. And it looks like our storm is past. So good night, everyone. Okay.